Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hello and welcome back to Simply Serie A, brought to you by the FNX Network. On this week's edition, we'll be talking about the big game between Napoli and Juve, the state of officiating on the peninsula, the Derby della Capitale, Cagliari's win over Inter, and Atalanta's Europa League aspirations. All that and more on this week's edition of Simply Serie A. As always, I'm going to begin by rounding up the results from week 26. Atalanta 3, Fiorentina 1, Cagliari 2, Inter 1, Empoli 3, Parma 3, Genoa 0, Frosinone 0, Lazio 3, Roma 0, Milan 1, Sassuolo 0, Napoli 1, Juventus 2, Spal 1, Sampdoria 2, Torino 3, Chievo 0, Udinese 2, Bologna 1. Now, there's plenty to discuss, so let's get straight to it. I'm your host, Harry Sinu, and on this edition, my two panellists are regular Vittorio Campanile. Welcome back to the show, mate. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. And joining us this evening is Mr. Adam Digby, Italian football writer. Adam, it's an absolute pleasure to finally have you on a review show. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Can't complain. Can't complain. Right, guys, it makes sense to start with Juventus, seeing as we've got Adam with us this week. Massive game at the San Paolo. It was the game, I guess you could say, that ultimately ended the Scudetto race properly. Not that I thought there was a race on in the first place, but that kind of all but seals it, doesn't it? 16-point lead now for Juve. Adam, what did you make of Juve's performance? We'll get onto the controversial moments in the game a little bit later on.
I think it was a very, as much as I hate to use the cliche, it was a game of two halves, wasn't it, really? In the first half, before and after the first red card, I thought Juve were much improved from what we've seen in the past few weeks. They've been obviously seriously negative. They were terrible against Atletico Madrid. They weren't that much better against Bologna when they managed to scrape out a 1-0 win the week before. But I thought they were really positive and really trying to play on the front foot in the first half and in the first few minutes of the second half against Napoli. And that's really pleasing to see. It's a shame it didn't last. And then obviously after the Pjanic red card, it was all Napoli, wasn't it? And Juve were really clinging on at the end.
Absolutely. Vittorio, let's start talking about these decisions. Let's go through them one by one. The first one was the incident where Meret got sent off. Alex Meret, the Napoli goalkeeper, on the evening. He was shown a red card when he sort of tangled with Cristiano Ronaldo. There wasn't any contact there, though, was there, Vittorio? What did you make of that whole incident?
I'm not sure there wasn't any contact. My opinion is that if Cristiano Ronaldo didn't jump, then obviously he would have hit the leg of the goalkeeper. So, you know, as a lot of Italian newspapers said, that was a clear penalty. So the problem is that a lot of Napoli journalists and Napoli fans focus so much on the penalty, on the red card, forgetting the mistake Malquit made. I mean, if you want to win the Scudetto and you're fighting against Juventus, you have to be perfect. And that was a terrible mistake. I think it was a red card. I think Ronaldo would have scored without Meret coming out. So I can understand that it's bad that a match so important get influenced by a red card so early after 25 minutes, something like that. But for me, I didn't have any doubt, honestly.
Okay. Adam, where did you stand on that incident? I've watched it back. I don't know. I might be wrong. But, you know, I thought that if you're going to jump over him the way Ronaldo did, that you probably could jump past him and carry on. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit overly critical of Ronaldo. Maybe it's because I absolutely hate diving. But I didn't feel that Ronaldo had to throw himself down like that. I don't know. Adam, your take on it? I know you're a Juve fan, but your take on it?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'll say is that the rules are very, very clear in the fact that there doesn't have to be contact. And I think because some decisions, the contact is important and it does make the difference. If you run into the box and a defender hip checks you, even just slightly, it throws you off, and that's a penalty. And in that case, you have to slow it down. You have to look at VAR. You have to see if there's contact. And then if there is, then it's a penalty. If there isn't, then it's a dive. But in instances like this one, there doesn't have to be contact for it to be a foul. The intent and the dangerous play from Meret make it a foul, whether he touches Ronaldo or not, because Ronaldo has to leap out of the way. If he stands still, he's probably going off injured, to be honest. But after that, yes, I agree. He probably could have landed on his feet and gone into the box. I guess when you know the rules, like Ronaldo clearly does, there's no need to go into the box, because if you go on and you score, the ref plays advantage. He's not going to go back and send the guy off. He'll go back and give him a yellow.
Yeah, that's right.
So Juve got the benefit of, because it was outside the area. And that's another important point too. If that would have been inside the area, because it's the goalkeeper, he would have got a yellow card, not a red card, because they changed the rules about sending off the player in the box and giving away a penalty. So if it would have been a penalty, it would have only been a yellow, which again is something that people have misinterpreted when they've been complaining on Twitter and on social media. He doesn't need to go down, but you can't really blame him for doing it. And it's a foul whether he does or he doesn't. He needed to leap out of the way so he didn't get hurt, and in that instant, then it's a foul and it's a free kick and it's a red card. To be honest, it really did change the second half of the second half of the first half. It really put Napoli on the back foot, and Juve took advantage of that. But I don't think really Juve changed the way that they were playing. Obviously, it made it easier only playing against 10 men, but I don't think the numerical advantage was really obvious. I think the game wasn't too different and too dissimilar than it was before that red card. I think if you go back and look, the first 24, 25 minutes and the second 22 minutes of the first half are very similar in the way that the two teams played.
Okay, interesting stuff. Let's put it out to our listeners as well. Let's hear what our listeners think. Tweet us at Simply Serie A, your thoughts on that particular decision. But then we've got more to come onto on this game, which is the excellent thing. Vittorio, the free kick from Pjanic. I mean, Pjanic is so important to that Juve side, in my opinion. And Adam touched on the fact that the Pjanic red card really affected them. How highly do you rate Miralem Pjanic? And is he such a vital cog to this Juve side?
Well, I think he's a key player for Juventus. And when I saw where the free kick said was, I said immediately, he's going to score now. And, you know, I'm not a genius. It was knowing Pjanic very well. You knew that that was a perfect spot for him. But when he was playing for Roma, he was incredible with his free kick. Now with Juventus, he become a fundamental playmaker of the team. I don't know if it's Allegri that helped me help him evolve in this position, but I think he's top five in Europe at this moment. And he's such an important player for Juventus that the team is struggling in midfield. Emre Can is not always convincing, and Allegri doesn't have that many options there. So when Pjanic is playing, you can feel the difference. And I thought he improved so much from when he was with Roma and now with Juventus that it's impressive. Really, I feel that he's top five playmaker in Serie A, in Europe, sorry, at the moment. So he's really important. And obviously, when Juventus lost him for a red card, the match changed because he's vital for this team. And without him, you know, Juventus lost a big player. It's, you know, when Napoli took off Milik, yes, he's a striker, but he's not involved in turning the ball around, etc., like Pjanic for Juventus. So I think that was a big difference for Juventus.
Yeah. I mean, talking about Emre Can, he got the second goal, didn't he, Adam? What have you made of him since he's joined Juventus? I've heard mixed reviews. I'm interested to know where a Juve fan stands on the whole Emre Can thing. Has he sort of lived up to the bill?
Probably not. I think he's starting to slowly improve. Obviously, he had a problem with a gland in his neck that needed an operation, and he was out for a brief period. And he struggled before that because of it. The side effects of the problem he had really affected his play. Well, his fitness rather than his play. The problem is that was just touched upon, really. Pjanic is the one player that Juve have got who makes a difference in midfield. I like Emre Can. I like Rodrigo Bentancur. I like Blaise Matuidi. The problem is that playing two of those and Pjanic, it's not good enough. It's too slow. It's too one-dimensional. And Pjanic, as great as he is, it fits into that as well. He's a great passer. He's a great playmaker. He's incredible at work kicks. And he's great at corners too. But it does make the midfield very slow and very one-paced. Juve really desperately need that third player to bring some dynamism to the team. And I think if you have Bentancur as the sub for Pjanic, if you have Can or Matuidi playing, and then I don't have any problems with any of them. My problem is that the combination of any of those players just doesn't really work. And for me, that's where Juve are lacking this season.
Absolutely. Some really great insight there. And then obviously Napoli pulled the goal back, didn't they? We've touched on the Pjanic red card already, so I'm not going to go back on that. I don't think there were any complaints, really. It was a handball, wasn't it, for the second yellow? I mean, I don't know if you guys have a different view on that. So definitely a red card in my book anyway. Napoli pulled one back. And as you said, Adam, they really turned up the heat, didn't they, late on in the game. And then they were awarded a penalty. Vittorio, what were your thoughts on that penalty award? Because I know it went to VAR and it felt to me like it looked a little bit harsh. I don't know. I've only seen it once. I must admit, I haven't gone back and watched it again, but I thought it looked a little bit harsh.
Well, the thing is, he didn't watch the ball. So that was his excuse. But you have to keep your hands close to your body. And otherwise, then it's a penalty. This is the rule. You can accept it or not, but unfortunately, that's the rule. And the fact that Alexandro didn't watch the ball, it's not an excuse. You can say that jumping is difficult to, you know, jump with your hands close to your body. It's more logical to open them. So, but that's the rule. If they don't change it, then that's a penalty.
Would you say, though, that you know, the ball did graze his chest, didn't it? And I mean, that was the thing for me. I felt that's why I kind of felt it was a little bit harsh. But I totally accept what you're saying. The rules are rules at the end of the day. Go on, Adam.
No, all I was going to say is the rule is that if it comes off the body part and then hits your hand, it's not a voluntary action, so it shouldn't be a penalty. But what I will say is if you look back over the course of this season, any time the ball hits somebody's hand in the penalty area and it goes to VAR, the referee is giving a penalty. So while by the rules, that's not a penalty, and I think that's very, very clear, and I think... not that they would agree with me being a Juve fan, but if you ask any Inter fans who were watching their game against Fiorentina the week before, they will tell you very all too well, the referee is going to give a penalty for that, because exactly the same thing happened to D'Ambrosio against Fiorentina. It hit him in the chest, it went onto his arm, went to VAR, penalty. And that's the reality that these players are having to live with. If it hits your hand in any way whatsoever and the decision is referred to VAR and the ref goes to take a second look, he's going to give the penalty if it's touched your hand. We've seen Vitor Hugo was given a penalty against him for a cross that maybe grazed his fingernail in the first game between Inter and Fiorentina this season. Mm-hmm. We saw the D'Ambrosio one last week. There's four or five other ones that escaped me off the top of my head, but that's the way the game is going this season in Serie A. And by those standards, then yeah, it's a penalty. And yeah, that's awful. But it all plays back into what I've been saying for 3 or 4 years, that the referees in Serie A, they're not biased. They're not looking to fix matches, to cheat certain teams or favour certain teams. They're just terrible. The referees are utterly terrible. And the issue that I have with so many Serie A fans is after the Fiorentina penalty last week, you get Inter fans saying, oh, it's a conspiracy, it's against Inter, blah, blah, blah. Well, now you're telling me there's actually a refereeing conspiracy against Juventus? Because it's the same penalty, but... So if we're saying it's the same for both teams, then to me, that's not a conspiracy. That's just atrocious officiating. And until people change the way they're looking at it, until they put aside their club biases and say, no, Fiorentina probably shouldn't have had a penalty last week. No, Napoli shouldn't have had a penalty this week. Inter were robbed. Juventus were robbed. Then nothing will ever change. Because if you go to a referee and say you're biased, he's going to go, no, I'm not. And then the argument is ended. If you go to the referee or to the referees union and say, your officials are terrible, then you can actually have a conversation about that, about improving standards. If you start throwing around accusations of bias, nothing is ever going to change because the referees are not biased. They're not taking bribes every week to give penalties away. They're just not. We know that in Serie A at the moment. We didn't know that in the past. But now you look at the game and it's not favouring anybody. It's just awful. And something has to change with that. And people need to recognise that and admit that to themselves first and then say it out loud, because all this talk of bias, favouritism, conspiracies, match fixing, whatever, it's just nonsensical. But the referees are just flat out awful.
Yeah, I mean, that's a widespread problem, isn't it? I think, I know, being an Arsenal fan as I am, watching the game at the weekend with Spurs, you know, and I agree with you, it wasn't biased. It was the fact that the referee basically messed up for both teams, and it's a constant problem, isn't it? I mean, Vittorio, have you got anything to add to that on the overall standard of Serie A refereeing? Is it an issue to you as well?
Well... I still believe that Italian referee are better than English one, to be honest.
I agree with you on that. I definitely agree with you.
And I think that that's not even a discussion, to be honest. And I have to say, and we saw it, especially in Europe League, some referee from some national are awful, are really embarrassing. And they don't even VAR there. So, you know, they commit some amazing... unbelievable mistake. So, but yeah, one thing is, it's not very easy. Football is, especially at high level, is so fast, and it's very hard for the referee to be all the time very close to the ball. And we forget that some of the referee are older, and so they don't have the pace to be close to the ball. So sometimes they have to go with experience, etc. But I agree, there are some of referees in Italy that are terrible. But, you know, football is so fast that it's very, very difficult. And still, if you check, you know, there's people talking about the penalty of Cristiano Ronaldo, the red card of Meret. And people keep talking about it, even after they saw the thing five times. So if it's not clear for them after five times, it's not easy for a ref to decide in 5 seconds and without.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yes, I agree that there are some referees that are terrible. And one thing people forget is they are human. During the match, you start discussing, maybe you have a little bit, you know, you behave badly to the ref. So, you know, sometimes there is even the bad reaction. Some ref take it personally. Yeah. And it's terrible. You see suddenly this ref starting, you know, complaining about teams giving yellow cards for no reason and so on. So, again, there could be better ref in Italy, but they're not the worst in the world, to be honest.
Yeah. No. With that, I agree.
The other thing I would say is with VAR, I think that the next step with VAR is going to have to be some kind of central panel like they have in the NBA with the referrals for players, where it can't be a guy in the stadium watching on TV telling the referee to have another look. Because I think what we see so many times, now we've had two seasons of this, is so many times you see the referee gives... Say the referee doesn't give a penalty, and then the VAR official says, oh, I think you should have another look at that. Maybe you're wrong. As the ref goes over to look, he's already thinking, oh, no, I've made a mistake.
The other referee
clearly thinks he's made a mistake because he's telling him to look at it. So he goes over to look already thinking, oh, I've got this wrong, I have to change it. And nearly every time they go to look at the screen, they change the decision. And that has to be because of the doubt planted by the guy telling them to go and have another look. And I think until we have some kind of independent panel saying, actually, no, you got that wrong, you need to give a penalty, and taking the referee's decision, the decision out of the referee's hands.
Yep.
Because yes, as you say, they are human, they do make mistakes. But if you tell the referee, ooh, maybe I think you've made a mistake, and he runs over to the touchline to have a look, and he's got two coaches and all the substitutes and all the crowd screaming in his ear, ah, you've made a mistake, that's why you're looking, look, change it. He's going to change it because he is human, because he is going to think, oh, no, I can't believe I've messed up. Everyone's going to see this on TV. And we see it every time. They change it every time. And it's a flaw in the system. And the system works. The system has helped so many times to clear up when there is a big mistake, where the referee has missed it. But on these marginal calls, too often we're getting a referee who's made a right call, doubting himself because of the guy watching on video. And when you slow things down enough, you can convince yourself of anything. And for me, that's... leading to more issues that don't need to be there.
That is a fantastic point. And that is something that I think we saw in the World Cup as well. If you cast your mind back, we saw occasions where referees were doing exactly that. And I think there was one instance, I can't remember in which game it was, where a referee was told to go and look at something. He went and looked at it and he stuck to his guns. And he received a huge amount of praise after that because he wasn't willing to back down to the pressure of being told, you know, you need to go and look at the VAR. I think that's a fantastic point that you raised there, and hopefully, you know, it's something that can be ironed out in the future. Now, just conscious of time, I want to move on, and this next game that we're going to talk about, Vittorio would have been licking his lips at the prospect of discussing this one, because his beloved Lazio blew Roma away. You know, Roma had a chance to catch up to Inter, but Lazio instead of put themselves back in the race for a Champions League place after dominating at the Stadio Olimpico. Vittorio, your thoughts on the performance? How did the game go, and what were your takeaways from it?
Well, as you were saying, Lazio dominate Roma. Yes, there has been in the beginning of the second half, Roma had a couple of great chances. If they scored there and Pastore missed an unbelievable chance, then the match would have been completely different. But I thought the biggest take of that match is Inzaghi destroyed Di Francesco. He picked the right 11 while Di Francesco didn't. He made the right substitution while Di Francesco didn't. And you can say that Inzaghi has proved to be a better manager than Di Francesco. And
is that like Italian referees are better than English referees? The way Di Francesco is going, that's kind of a low bar.
Well, for me, Di Francesco made that terrible mistake that cost the match when he took off De Rossi, that was the only defender midfielder for Roma, and put in Pastore. It's not a coincidence that 5 minutes later Lazio scored on a counter-attack, because Roma had nothing. The two central defenders are very slow. They are Fazio and Juan Jesus. You had only De Rossi helping them, and you take it off to put Pastore, and immediately afterwards Correa finished the match and get Lazio a penalty. And that was an awful mistake that didn't make any sense. You know, De Rossi was the only one playing there in the midfield position, and you take him off. So I thought Di Francesco made terrible mistakes. Same thing, Schick is not doing nothing this season, and you take off El Shaarawy. Yes, El Shaarawy wasn't doing that much in the derby, but if you remember the last seven matches, El Shaarawy had 3 goals and 3 assists. So, you know, give him a little bit of faith instead of putting Schick, that is, you know, a mystery. So, yeah, I think, I really think that Inzaghi finally made the right decision while Di Francesco proved to not be a very good manager.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking as someone who's outside of Italy, and obviously I love Italian football. If I didn't, I wouldn't be doing this show. But for me, obviously, I'm an Arsenal supporter, and that's what kind of what I watch every week. I watch Serie A every week, but I probably, my knowledge is not as strong on sort of Di Francesco and Roma in particular. But Adam, from your perspective, you know, is Di Francesco a bad manager? Because he seems to get a lot of bad press. I thought that last season they did really well to get to where they got in the Champions League, but the wheels seem to have come off a little bit this season, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, but to be honest, I don't really think it's Di Francesco that's to blame. I think you have to look at the way that the squad is constructed, and I think you can point to taking off El Shaarawy or taking off De Rossi, and the fact that Roma still relies so heavily on Daniele De Rossi in 2019 is scandalous, really. But you could almost argue that Roma lost the derby when they put Robin Olsen's name on the team sheet, because he is just awful. And when you consider that he's replaced Alisson as well, that is just the drop-off in talent that Roma have got. They've got Schick instead of Mohamed Salah. And the vacuum of talent there, since they've sold so many players, Paredes, the list goes on and on and on. And Monchi for me has been found lacking in Rome. He's made some trouble mistakes. So many of his signings have not paid off. And you look at Roma, and the only players who really stand out as being anywhere near the required standard at the moment is Daniele De Rossi, who in his mid-30s really should be not be being the best midfielder in your team anymore. He should be a complementary player, but he's the most vital player in the squad. And Nicolo Zaniolo, who was a throw-in in the Nangolan deal. And yeah, Monchi did well to identify him, and he was stubborn about making sure he got him in the deal. But if you're not selling Nangolan, you're not getting Zaniolo. And yeah, he's probably been better than Roger Nangolan this season, but he's a make-weight in a transfer for another player, where if Inter say, no, we'll just give you another 20 million, you don't sign him. It's not like they went out and spent money to get him. And that is a really strong black mark against Monchi for me, that the squad he's assembled for Di Francesco is shocking. None of his players are working, and then Di Francesco could be doing better. He's making mistakes, but the pressure that comes with being a manager of Roma is staggering already. And when you had a good squad, or a very good squad even, that was looking to challenge second place, it was definitely the third best squad in Serie A, and now they're not going to get anywhere near the Champions League places, are they? They're way off the pace of the two Milan clubs and Lazio. And then probably going to be overtaken by Atalanta and maybe even Sampdoria as well. And it really does not bode well. And if Di Francesco doesn't steer them past Porto, he's probably going to lose his job this week.
Wow.
Can I jump in a second? I agree with what Adam's saying. The transfer market of Roma has been embarrassing. You don't take Alisson, sell Alisson and buy Olsen. But it's even true that if you buy Pastore, if you buy Cristante, they are trequartisti. So they don't fit in a 4-3-3 scheme. So Di Francesco, you have to work around. I don't know why you said you agree with buying these players, because you know that Pastore cannot fit in a 4-3-3. Same thing for Cristante.
But even more than that, Cristante, Zaniolo and Pastore all play the same position.
They cannot play together.
There's no formation in the world where you could play all three of them.
I think they didn't expect Zaniolo to explode. You know, they said, okay, Zaniolo is good. In 2 years' time, we're going to have a very good player. They were forced to play him now. But you can find, you know, a 4-2-3-1 solution, something like that, with Zeko striker. But if you agree with these players, then you have to check. You cannot play with a 4-3-3. Pastore is terrible as a midfielder. And same thing with the other player. Cristante is embarrassing. You paid him 25 million euros to be a central midfielder. He's not. You're wasting money. And don't think that Roma didn't spend money. Schick, 40 million euros 2 years ago. Terrible. This year, you bought Cristante for 25. Pastore for 20. Olsen for how much was it? 7, 11? You know.
The Schick one as well is a real standout, because obviously, we know, looking back, he agreed to sign for Juve for 32 million and then failed a medical with a heart problem. And Juve walked away, terminated the deal and everything. And then Roma jump in later the same summer and pay 8 million more to sign a player who they know has health problems. Like, how does that make any sense? Surely you pay less.
Strange, isn't it? I mean, you know, I know I keep referring back to the Premier League, but Monchi is someone who's linked with a move to the Premier League, isn't he? There's lots of talk of him coming to my club to take up the mm-hmm. reins there. And it's interesting to hear from you guys that, you know, he hasn't always got things right, because people here seem to have this this idea about Monchi that he's going to come here, he's going to pluck superstars out of thin air, he's going to build you a team to be reckoned with, and it's easy, job done. But there is... It seems like, well, obviously there's a reason that Monchi is on his way out of Roma, and it kind of makes sense now from all the things that you guys are telling me.
Yeah, I think the one of the big problems with Monchi is obviously he'd only ever worked at one club and in one league. And he was there a long time, and you can look and you can point to, oh, he sold Dani Alves for lots of money, sold this player, that player. But he was there for years and years and years. So I don't know. I don't watch Spanish football all the time, but there must have been, for every Dani Alves, there must have been plenty of Robin Olsons.
And let's not forget he sold the Ciro Immobile to Lazio for 8.5 million euros, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, people, Lazio fans still are thankful for Monchi for that, you know? How can you sell it for that amount of money? And now he's the capocannoniere of Serie A. So, yeah, as you were saying, he's been good at Sevilla, but he also made mistakes. And every Roma fan is hating him at the moment. And it's not Roma that is sacking him. It seems that it looks like he should have, I'm not sure, a deal already with the Arsenal, and now he's trying to find a deal to leave Roma.
Yeah.
But having said all of that, it might work out well for him somewhere else. It just hasn't worked at Roma. And we've seen plenty of places, haven't we? Pep Guardiola wasn't a raging success at Bayern Munich. He was incredible at Barcelona, and he's great at Manchester City, but it didn't really work out for him in Germany. So maybe in a different league, a different club, everything goes back to how it was before for him. But for now, in this current role, in this current league, he's been found lacking.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting to see how that story develops. Now, the next team I want to talk about is Inter. They suffered a defeat. Milan leapfrogged them with their victory over Sassuolo. And, you know, a disappointing defeat in Cagliari. Vittorio, Inter, still got problems, haven't they? Spalletti, not sure if he'll last beyond the rest of this season. What are your thoughts? And did you expect them to slip up this weekend?
They have to solve the problem with Icardi, and it doesn't look it's going to be very soon. Again, Wanda, the wife agent, has spoken to Mediaset yesterday. In the Monday, when was it? And, Marotta said that they would have a meeting to discuss a new contract. This never happened. Icardi now saying that his knee is hurting so bad he might end the season now. So that's a big problem. They don't have a real replacement for Mauro Icardi. Lautaro Martinez is an interesting player, but it's not a striker of the same level of Mauro Icardi. And if Inter is forced to put Ranocchia, a central defender, play striker against Cagliari, and this is, you can say, people can say, yeah, but other team did it. Yes, but not every single weekend, you know. This is not the first time they had to play Ranocchia striker because they don't have anyone else. It's the third week in a row that they're doing it. This tells you that there's a lack of striker. And this idea of, you know, fighting now Icardi, they should have waited May probably, and you know, when they're already in the Champions League spot, they can start saying, okay, Icardi, you're not the captain anymore, and see what happens. Now it's far too early. The season is very long, and Inter are already fourth. They risk to get out of the Champions League spot if they continue like that. And after hearing Vandanara yesterday, I'm not sure that they will find a solution. And there have been even rumors now because she started following Real Madrid on Instagram. So, you know, newspaper in Italy say, yeah, she's following Real Madrid. He's going to turn to Real Madrid. Inter love to auto-destroy. And that's what they're doing this season. They had the striker and now they don't have it anymore. And it's going to be difficult without anybody who scores.
Yeah, I mean, Adam, do you agree with that? Do you think that this whole Icardi thing should have been dealt with at the end of the season? I certainly agree with that because it's just been an unwelcome distraction. I mean, this has been the fifth game, I think, that he's missed since this whole thing of being stripped of the captaincy. That can't be helpful, can it?
It can't, but what I would say is, knowing Beppe Marotta from his time at Juve, he's not done this for no reason. He's not a stupid man. He's a very, very astute director. He's very good at massaging problems and making sure they don't blow up. And clearly, this has. Now, yes, it's a massive distraction. Yes, it's terrible. But we can sit and we can talk round and round in circles about who Wandanara is following on Instagram and whether Mauro Icardi liked João Cancelo's post after Juve beat Napoli, and we can go on and on and on and on. But to me, the biggest problem at Inter is still, even with that said, it's not Icardi, it's Spalletti, because the man is a disaster. Like he's got two youth team players on the bench, two strikers who've scored a lot of goals in the Inter youth team. But instead of putting them on, maybe one of them is Zaniolo, you know, the guy that you had already and you gave away to get Nangolan. Try one of them. Inter's youth system is fantastic. The amount of players who've come through Inter's youth team, been abandoned by the club and gone on to success elsewhere, including Leonardo Bonucci, may I add, is staggering. And the team that Inter would have just of their own youth products would be incredible. But you look at what is going on with that team, and Spalletti's answer to being 1-0 down to Cagliari is to bring on Borja Valero in midfield, is to bring on Antonio Candreva, who has less accurate crosses in Serie A this season than me, and then put on Andrea Ranocchia as a striker because he's 6'5". Throwing on a 6'5" central defender as a striker when you're chasing a game is something that a League Two manager in England might do in the fourth tier or even lower. It's pub football. It's not Serie A. It's not a Champions League team. The man is ridiculous. And to further underline how ridiculous he is, he's got Matteo Politano there, who is a fantastic dead ball specialist, and he sends Candreva on and lets Candreva take free kicks. And with the score at 2-1, he pumps a free kick in the last minute into the second tier of the stand. Like, we know Candreva can't cross. He averages more inaccurate crosses than anybody else in Europe's top five leagues. The man is terrible. And you let him take free kicks. Like, it's, for me, the whole Wandanara, Mauro Icardi, what is going on saga is completely overshadowing the fact that over the past few weeks, Luciano Spalletti is making terrible decision after terrible decision. And everybody's like, oh, well, did you see what Antonio Cassano called Wandanara on Tiki Taka on Sunday? Who cares? The man is supposed to be a coach. Coach the team. And he's not. He's actively making the problems worse and then complaining about VAR, about referees, about the opposition. He needs to look to himself and start making some smart decisions, because you look at the Inter squad, and seriously, that is the second best squad in Serie A after Juve. Like, no other team in Serie A has the level of talent that they have got. Even if you take out the injured players, their starting 11 is good enough, even without Icardi, to be much, much better than they are, and certainly to be beating Cagliari. But because of the decisions he is making, not because Icardi's not there, which, yeah, it robs you of your best striker, it robs you of a definite goal threat. But are you telling me that between Politano, Nangolan, Perisic, and all the other players that they have got, you can't muster a lead against Cagliari and manage to get a positive result? You're gonna throw it away. They only just got a draw with Rapid Vienna in the Europa League. They've won one game without Icardi, and that was against Parma, because Lautaro Martinez scored very late on in a 0-0 draw. But what is he doing? Seriously, the guy just baffles me every week. You watch him and he's so negative on the touchline. He's making bad decisions. And then it's absolutely fine, because nobody's going to call him out on it, because, oh, Wandanara follows Real Madrid on Instagram.
Oh, yeah, Vittorio, when you look at the league table, I've got it in front of me right now, and we've just spent time talking about how poor Roma have been, but Roma are only 3 points behind Inter. Lazio, if they win their game in hand, they'll be 3 points behind Inter. There's a real danger, isn't there, of Inter, if they don't sort this out sooner rather than later, they could find themselves in the Europa League positions.
Yes, and Inter has this love to all to destroy, and you know, this Icardi decision is the perfect example. And then Spalletti goes and blames journalists, saying that they put pressure on Inter. No, it's not. You put it on your own, you know. So we are just beginning of March. There are a lot of matches to go on, and so yes, Inter can easily end the season in the seventh spot. You know, it all depends on how they recover now. And again, there's Rapid Gen coming now. So, you know, if they get out even of the Europa League, they're already out of Coppa Italia, then Spalletti will be in a much dangerous position. We know that Marotta doesn't love Spalletti. There already have been some discussion. They're talking about Conte, etc. So, yeah, they had, for me, 1 month ago, Inter had easily the third spot under control, and they throw it away. Now Milan is playing much better. They did a terrific winter transfer market, and I don't think Inter is going to be able to recover Milan. Now they have to watch behind them. They're lucky that Roma is trying to auto-destroy themselves as well, and Lazio, I'm not sure they have the power, the players to recover Inter. Atalanta is playing amazing football, but again, Gasperini doesn't have very talented players available. So maybe they're going to be able to save themselves. I'm not sure. But yeah, they put themselves in this terrible position, and I still don't understand why they did it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Atalanta there. Let's look at Atalanta's game with Fiorentina, the two sides that are in the hunt for European football next season, both doing particularly well. Luis Muriel opened the scoring, but Atalanta fought back. And these guys have played some really entertaining games amongst themselves of late, haven't they? Adam, starting with yourself first, how impressed have you been with Atalanta this season? Because we haven't heard from you yet this season regarding them. What are your thoughts? Can they stage a late surge for one of those European positions?
I think they can certainly get a Europa League spot. Yeah, I think, as was just said before, I think the Champions League places are probably a little bit beyond them, I think. I think it's looking increasingly like a battle between Lazio's lack of overall talent and their massive injury list against Inter's ability to self-destruct and whichever one has least effect, then the other team's probably going to get into the Champions League. Atalanta are fantastic to watch out there. They're so positive. They just go as at full power for 90 minutes as often as possible. They make some mistakes. You can catch them out at the back. A few key injuries in key areas would really derail them. They were powered up the table a little bit by Zapata's hefty scoring streak, but now Papu Gomez and Ilicic are in incredible form, and you just look at that front three and they complement each other so well. They swap positions, they move around, they play with such pace, they try and win the ball back high up the pitch, and they're lethal when they get in the box, the three of them. It's superb to watch, it really is. The games between them and Fiorentina, with one more still to come in the second leg of the Coppa Italia semi-final, have been fantastic. What did we get this week? 10 goals in two matches,
yep.
A 3-3 and a 3-1. It's superb. And they really are just fantastic to watch. But then you look at the team behind Ilicic, Zapata and Papu Gomez, and there's not really a lot there, is there? It's a little bit of smoke and mirrors and a lot of huffing and puffing and running around. It's incredible what they're managing to do on such a lack of talent. I said before about Roma selling players. Atalanta have probably sold more high-level talent than anybody else over the last 2 years, and somehow Gasperini's managing to hold it together with a bit of brown paper and some sticky back plastic, and he's managing to put out a team that functions really well every week just through being the exact opposite of Luciano Spalletti and actually being a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, Ilicic in particular is a player that's really impressed me this season. Vittorio, looking at Fiorentina, what are their chances of surging into one of those Europa League spots? Luis Muriel's been a good addition, hasn't he?
Yes, let's not forget Torino, because Mazzarri is a very good manager. You know, great defense, and it's tough to beat them with that great defense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
I think the chance of Fiorentina are all related to the Coppa Italia, because I think they're a little bit far away for the Europa League spot. Probably next Sunday is going to be the key. If they lose against Lazio, if they don't beat Lazio, I think they're going to be far away, and so they're going to focus on the Coppa Italia, because it's their biggest chance. Fiorentina is a very interesting team. They have a lot of youngsters, very interesting, like Chiesa, Simeone. But as normally Pioli's team do, they are going up and down continuously. They are not able to win three matches in a row and things like that. Unfortunately, with Pioli, this is the type of team you're getting. They're very young, So that doesn't help. They're very talented, but still, these young players, like even Simeone, played very well a couple of weeks ago, then badly again. So it's very nice to see, and I'm looking forward to the next Coppa Italia semi-final, Atalanta-Fiorentina, because it's going to be amazing. But yeah, don't think Fiorentina has the power to reach a Europa League spot, if not reaching the final in the Coppa Italia. But even there, they have to hope that the team they're going to fight against is going to reach the Champions League spot, so they're going to get the Europa League one.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at Milan, just finally, the team who leapfrogged Inter into the top three. Now, we were talking last week, weren't we, Vittorio, and the week before about Gattuso. They did the bare minimum this week, didn't they? They scraped past Sassuolo, but Adam, it doesn't really matter, does it? It's kind of by any means necessary, as long as they get the points on the board. Have you been impressed with Gattuso? Has he instilled the right mentality there finally?
Oh, I see, yeah. A team plays terribly but wins anyway, so let's ask the Juve fan what happened. I think, to be honest, Gattuso did the right thing after the match. He said, it's not good enough, we can't keep winning this way. But I think he has to take huge, huge positives from that game, because from the start of January, when they added Piontek and Paqueta, that those two players really carried the team. They played great. They were made everybody around them better. The players were looking to get the ball into the box because Piontek was so dangerous. Paquetá brought some new life into a midfield that had been kind of flat and a little bit one-dimensional before his arrival. And that's great. That those two players, signing those players like that and raising the level of talent that you have is always an important thing. But what's also important is when those two guys aren't firing, that you have the structure and the determination and the doggedness to just fight and grind out that win. And they did that. And that's massive. If you can win when you play badly, not every week as a Juve fan who's suffering through the last few weeks, as much as you can suffer when you have a 16-point lead. It really is essential to your long-term aims. If you want to get into the top four, you have to win games like that when nothing's going well apart from Donnarumma had a fantastic game in goal, but nothing else is working for you, yet you still take home 3 points. That's superb. It really, really is, and you can't underline the importance of that. If you ask an Inter fan right now, what would you give for a scrappy 1-0 win where everybody plays terrible but you get 3 points, they'd snap your hand off. They really, really would, and rightly so. It's just what you need to keep the momentum going, and that feeds back into what you were saying before about Fiorentina. They are up and down. They do have inconsistencies because they're a young team, because the squad's not great, because they were so poor last season. They have a lot of holes in midfield. They struggle when any of their first choice defenders are injured. They only have one winger in Chiesa when they need to make the 4-3-3 work. But if everybody plays well, they can get good results. When somebody of their big players has a bad game, they don't get those results. And that's what happens when you're not very good, when you're a mid-table team punching above your weight. But for Milan, if you can grind out those wins, that makes all the difference between being fifth or sixth and getting that all-important fourth place. And if Milan get Champions League football, which will be guaranteed to be in the group stage if they finish in the top four, that is huge for them. It really, really is. You cannot emphasise enough the importance of that. What that would mean to revitalise Milan, for them to be a Champions League club again. And it doesn't matter who you support. Like, as an Arsenal fan yourself, Harry, if you get in the Champions League and you draw AC Milan, it doesn't really matter what name is on the back of the shirt. When you see AC Milan, the red and black stripes, you've got to go to San Siro. That's a tough task. It doesn't matter who they are. It doesn't matter who you are. That's always going to be a big game, and it really will be great for Italian football if Milan can get in the Champions League again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could tell you that from last season when Arsenal drew them in the Europa League. It was kind of like, I know this is not the greatest Milan side, but you still got to go to the San Siro. You still got to play this legendary football club. And I completely get what you mean. Milan carries, or the name Milan carries a certain weight with it, doesn't it? Vittorio, anything to add on Milan and sort of the way they're scraping through at the minute?
Well, as I said last time, with Gattuso, you won't see amazing football. And this, for me, long-term can be a problem because I think Milan has quality players, but Gattuso is not able to make them perform as well as they should. Gattuso make Milan fight when things are going bad, etc. But when you're going to have to play against big teams, then you need to play nice football, good football. And I think that's the problem with AC Milan this season. We saw them losing a derby. So now they're going to have important matches coming, and they have to step up. They have to play much better. Since now, Piontek has been amazing and keep Milan alive. So now Gattuso have to do something more. I'm not sure he's the right manager for a very good team like Milan should be, but he has the rest of the season to prove me wrong.
Absolutely, he does indeed.
I think just to follow up on that, I totally agree. I think Gattuso is a limited manager. You know, he's great at getting them together. He's great at getting them to fight, and he's probably the right guy to bully them into the top four. I think once they're there, if they start having ambitions beyond just being a top four team, which they're AC Milan, surely they will have, then long term he's probably not the right guy. But if he's good enough to get them in the Champions League, even playing ugly football, I don't think it really matters. I think getting in the Champions League is so important that you do it by any means necessary. And if Gattuso does that, he'll be even more of a hero to Milan fans than he already was, which is saying something given what he meant to them as a player.
Absolutely, absolutely. Guys, that brings us to the end of this week's show. It's been a fantastic show, some great talking points, some great debate. Massive thank you to both of you. Vittorio, do you want to let our listeners know how they can follow you on social media and how they can find your podcast?
Well, if you really have nothing else to do, then you can follow us on Twitter at Lazio_Lounge, the English podcast of Lazio, and Vittorio Campa on Twitter.
Lovely, brilliant. Adam, thank you so much for joining us as well. And do you want to let our listeners know how they can follow you and all the fantastic work that you do?
Yeah, it's either Adam Digby on Facebook or at ADZ77 on Twitter.
Lovely, brilliant stuff. Guys, like I said, that brings us to the end of this show. It's been a great one. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Simply Serie A. And of course, hit that subscribe button. We'll be back with another show next week. Until then, ciao.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.